This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Ukraine conflict. I welcome Bill Raggio, senior fellow for the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. He keeps the Long War Journal, where you can routinely see reporting by his colleague, John Hardy, watching Ukraine conflict. We have a headline this morning that calls attention to the civilian population of Ukraine facing winter and a stalemated or apparently unhappy front in all directions. But this is about the cities. CNN running this headline in these last hours. Millions of Ukrainians face dark and cold after one of Russia's largest attacks on the energy infrastructure. There are reports of Russia using drones and missiles and glide bombs against energy nodes throughout Ukraine. In addition, there were reports over the weekend of Russia striking substations of two nuclear power plants. You will recall Zaporizhia, the largest nuclear power plant in Europe, is in Russian control, but there are other power plants to strike. This is especially alarming because the wrong missile in the wrong place at a power plant, a nuclear power plant, can lead to Chernobyl-like conditions for all of Europe, not just for Ukraine. So it is a dangerous game that Russians are playing. However, we have routine reports from Ukraine for quite some time of hours in which you do not have power during the day, so much so that CNN tells us people arrange their cooking hours or their homework hours when they have lights. That is the past. The question is there something new now with these reports of energy nodes being struck by a variety of missiles by the Russians? Are the Russians better at it? Are there less defenses? John, a very good evening to you. Is there a change in pattern you can recognize in these recent strikes on the energy node of Ukraine? Good evening to you, John.
Hey, John. Hey, Bill. Thanks for having me back on the show. So the Russians have made striking Ukrainian energy infrastructure a feature of the war going back, you know, the last few years. And you saw this in 2023, 2024, here now again in the current heating season. I think one thing that's a little different about this time around is the Russians have increased the percentage of ballistic missiles that they're using in each barrage. They've kind of increased the production of ballistic missiles generally, and now the kind of the proportion of ballistic threats relative to cruise missiles. So both Iskander short-range ballistic missiles and Kinjal air-launched ballistic missiles, these are harder for Ukraine to shoot down. Ukraine has a shortage of Patriot air defense batteries. Really, Ukraine's main only a defense against ballistic threats. And Ukraine is also, I think, short on the interceptor missiles for those Patriot batteries. I think the supply of those Patriots was never great for Ukraine, and it's probably a decline since the Trump administration took office. I think one thing that's significant about the current strike campaign is the Russians are targeting both electricity production, so like thermal and hydro power plants. Also, you know, now we've seen that the strikes on two substations for nuclear power plants. The Russians are also targeting electricity transmission and distribution stations throughout Ukraine, and in the latter case, mainly focusing on the border and frontline regions. So, in short, the Russians kind of adapting the way that they're trying to go after Ukraine's power grid.
These reports of striking substations of nuclear power plants, are they confirmed? And has Ukraine got a defense from that?
Ukrainian officials have you know, levied that accusation. I haven't reviewed satellite imagery that would confirm it.
So what we have here is the risk of nuclear power stations being hit by the Russians, but not at this point reporting about the containment vessel being hit. They're hitting what are called substations. Is that all? If they are, is that all correct, John?
That's what the Ukrainians are saying, yes.
Okay. And it's a fog of war. I understand that. Bill, you have a question for John.
Yeah, hello, John. So The Ukrainians claim that 50 missiles and 36 drones struck their targets, and then over 500 were launched in its entirety combined. First, does that hit rate seem realistic to you? And second, does the U.S. have the capacity to provide that many Patriot interceptors when the Russians are conducting that attack? My understanding is that the U.S. only manufactured somewhere between 500 and 600 Patriot missiles themselves for the entire year.
Yeah, the Russian production of ballistic missiles still outstrips Patriot missile production. So I think, you know, even if Ukraine, even if the United States were providing, you know, all it could to Ukraine, there would still be, you know, some gap there. Obviously, you know, we're not going to give all the missiles in our arsenal to Ukraine. You know, we have, you know, our own stocks and own contingencies to worry about. So yeah, that absolutely is a challenge. And I would just add that, you know, it's not only the ballistic missiles, you also have the Shahed type Garand drones in that equation. Russia has really exponentially increased production of those and has kind of changed up some tactical and technical adaptation with those drones to make them harder for Ukraine to shoot down in a cost effective way. So that's another challenge. I think, you know, you asked about the penetration rate. I think that's, you know, broadly sounds pretty accurate. You know, it's always hard to know if the figures provided by the Ukrainian Air Force are 100% correct. But I think the trend we've seen in general is an increased penetration rate for the Shahed type drones. And then also, you know, the challenge for ballistic missiles. So whereas Ukraine typically shoots down a majority of ground air launched cruise missiles, with the ballistics, usually a majority of those are getting through. That's been the trend over the past couple of months.
Is Ukraine in some fashion struggling more than ever, or are they handling the missiles and the drones and the incoming? There's a sense that Ukraine can take a punch no matter how many Russian missiles are flying. What is your sense, John?
I think this will be a really hard winter. That said, I don't think that, you know, I think the Russians are trying to kind of break Ukrainian will by freezing them. You know, they've tried that, like I said, for the past two winters as well. It does not work then. I don't think it'll achieve their ultimate objective now, but it certainly will be difficult. And I think Moscow hopes it'll be kind of another element that adds leverage to their negotiating position.
Well, let's talk about the negotiating position. The front lines, there's been reporting, and I wait for your verdict, John, because I understand fog of war, that Pokrovsk is in either Russian hands or near to Russian hands. Is there any substance to that?
So we discussed Pokrovsk. This is, again, a city in Donetsk Oblast in eastern Ukraine that the Russians have been trying to take for the better part of a year now. So, you know, I think that since we talked last week, the Russians have continued kind of infiltrating into the city, also attacking the nearby city of Mirnohrad. They kind of form an agglomeration. It's been a bastion of Ukrainian defense. The Russians, I think, had been trying to encircle that agglomeration. That was not successful. They're now trying to infiltrate into Pokrovsk and cut off the logistics to Mirnohrad. I think that there is a significant risk that that could happen. And we see, you know, the Russians from open source and kind of ports from the ground have infiltrated into a lot of Pokrovsk. It's hard to say exactly how much they control, because in this phase of the war, you often have Russian and Ukrainian infantry positions like intermingled. And so, you know, say the Russians are in one part of the city. Well, right next door, there might be a Ukrainian position that you just don't see from that particular video. So, you know, exactly how long the city can hold on, I don't know. But I will say there is a risk to Ukrainian forces, especially in Mirnohrad. And I would hope that, you know, this has been a pretty successful battle for Ukraine overall, attriting, you know, disproportionate amounts of Russian forces. I would hope that Ukraine does not kind of end that on a bad note by waiting too long to withdraw. And I would just hope that they would make force preservation the priority here.
What does Pokrovsk look like? Is it a darkened city with broken buildings and rubble and no civilians? What give us a picture roughly, John?
There's still a very small number of civilians in the city, probably under 1,000, probably the same for Minhrad. Much like kind of the other battered cities that Russia's slowly taken over the course of the war, Bakhmut, Avdiivka, et cetera. A lot of it is destroyed by months and months of artillery shelling, bombardment from the air. Russians concentrating a lot of their glide bombs on Pokrovsk and the kind of nearby villages. And then I would say one thing that's important right now is Ukrainian logistics in the whole agglomeration are pretty tough. You have Russia kind of using FPV drones, especially ones controlled via fiber optic cable that are immune to EW, electronic warfare, to exercise fire control over roads into the city and kind of within the city. So logistics, typically a supply delivery has to take place, dropped from like drones, casualty evacuation, troop rotation, et cetera. That's really, really difficult. So troops are typically walking like 10 to 20 kilometers to get to positions. And one thing that's difficult for the Ukrainian defense is that because there's so many Russians in the city, they kind of move around, try to infiltrate deeper into the Ukrainian rear. That can pose a threat to Ukrainian drone crews and mortars. And drones, of course, are the primary wave right now that Ukraine is kind of holding the Russians at bay. So when you kind of disrupt those drone crews, that can make the defense more difficult. Ukraine has redeployed some elite units to the city, and I think it's trying to continue holding it. How long exactly that'll last, I don't know.
John Hardy of the Foundation for Defense of Democracies, Bill Raggio, senior fellow, my colleague and co-host. When we come back, there's a rumor in London that Lavrov wants to talk to Marco Rubio. Is there anything to it or just more rumor of war? This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.